the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network. Should we call it a soul revival? From the greats like Charles Bradley, Sharon Jones, we can add another to the list, Duran Jones and the Indications. This week on the What Podcast, part two of our chat with Duran Jones and the Indications. Last week, Aaron Frazier. This week, Duran Jones of Duran Jones and the Indications. New soul, is it a trend? Or is it here to stay? We find out this week. The What Podcast, Barry Corder, Lord Taco, Brad Steiner. It starts right now. Podcast, which bands this year that matter? I'm Brad. That's Barry. I guess we just got Barry coming in from work. Look how pretty Barry Corder is. Where's the raggedy tie-dye t-shirt and, you know, the headband?
Well, first of all, you know, I need to say, first-time caller, I just want to say go Braves and I'll hang up and listen.
Had to gross me there. Out the door.
Yeah. No, I thought I'd get dressed. I thought I'd get nice for Durand. I felt.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You guess. Never get nice for me.
Well, you don't sing like he does. You don't make music like he does.
That is true. You know how much I love this. I'm not going to try and dork out as much as I did last week with Aaron Frazier. But, you know, Duran Jones, the reason why I even went to ACL this past year. You know, I went to ACL. I saw him in an after show. I then saw their show, and then I saw Aaron Frazier. Yeah. Frazier. I'm just such a big fan of the entire band, and I feel like I'm watching like this incredible progression of an artist right in front of me. You know, yeah. I said this to Aaron last week. I truly do feel the first time I saw Alabama Shakes, that's the way that I felt after seeing Duran Jones. I felt that something is moving, and I feel like I get to be a part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I want to get into it with him, but I'll ask you now before we do. And I know you're a big soul guy. I'm a big soul guy, an R&B guy. But is this a trend? I mean, is there enough? Well,
to be clear, I love R, hate B.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it may be.
You know
a
what
good
I mean?
There,
is there a shift? Yeah, I want to ask him because we didn't have a lot. Of this type of, you know, really deep soul music, or if it did, you couldn't find it. You know,
until
it wasn't
Sharon.
As accessible.
Until yeah. Sharon, you know, it does feel as though Sharon sort of changed everything.
Yeah. And, well, I want to get into it with him, but I just want to make sure that I wasn't alone in that, you know, just because we've talked to two guys that put out this kind of music that we like doesn't necessarily make it
it's
a trend.
True.
But.
I know it does feel a tad circumstantial, but I mean, with all that being said, have there ever been this many acts at one time in our generation, in our lives?
No, not
really.
Last.
I mean, we'd have to go back to the 70s. Right. You know, you have to go to Teddy Pendergrass.
Curtis Mayfield and the, yeah, for sure.
And you're right. You might be right. It was just, you know, hard to find. And, you know, they just did an incredible job curating. I mean, that is an incredible record label, rather. It's an incredible record label. They do an amazingly brilliant job. In fact, I'd love to just get somebody from it on the show and talk about the history and success of that, of talk about the genre. If you want to talk about the genre, go to the people that rebuilt it.
Because, I mean, and you know as well as any, it's all about demand. I mean, if people want to hear it, you guys and radio and the record labels, they'll sell it. If it'll sell, they'll make it. So there probably were people doing it. There just wasn't as much demand, but it sure is good. I like it.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever just taken a day where you've like gone through Daptone's roster?
No, not that specific.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, you go from, you know, Charles Bradley, Lee Fields, Sharon Jones, the Shaladas, the Archaics, you know, it is it's a home run after home run. It's sort of like hitters on the Braves. You know, they're just hitting ones into the sky and they're never coming down.
Yeah, they're never. I will say this, Saturday while I was doing some home remodeling, I played the Aaron Frazier album. Uh-oh. And then when it ended, I guess Apple Genius or whatever kept playing other artists, like a lot of the ones you just mentioned. So I had about 3 or 4 hours. It wasn't intentional, like, you know, play me that, you know.
I thought that you were going to say that you were mopping the floor to Aaron Frazier and the wife came over and had sexy time.
It didn't work out that way. But I'm not going to say it was Aaron's fault. He did his part.
That is terrific. So if you haven't figured out by now, part two of Duran Jones and the Indications today, last week Aaron Frazier, today Duran Jones. Before we get into that, I'd love to I think I need to issue an apology. Last week I said that festival season has officially ended. That was incorrect. I missed some major festivals, one in which is Halloween. A festival I've actually never been to. And it sort of surprised me that Halloween was even happening. I guess I just totally forgot it. And it totally slipped my mind. But yeah, it happened. And I, even though I've never been, right, I feel like it's the festival that most of my Bonnaroo friends talk about loving the most. It's got some sort of the culture of Halloween is the closest that I can probably say is Bonnaroo's from afar, from somebody who has never been, you know, this year, String Cheese Incident, Skrillex, Leon Bridges, My Morning Jacket, Krungbin, you know, they've got a sound, they've got an absolute lane and they stick in it every year.
Well, and just the name, I mean, I don't know that I think we talked about this several weeks ago. It just sounds like it's probably a whole lot of fun if you know, a place to just have a good time and let go, be crazy.
It's a rager, and I don't know if Dad's knees are going to make it. I don't know.
I think you probably mentioned that before.
Yeah,
it's probably true, but you'd be surprised.
So, if anybody that is a a listener of this podcast went to Halloween, please share some of your stories at the @what_podcast. On Instagram and Twitter. So the other festival that I miss, and I don't know how we missed this one either, Barry, I feel very out of the loop and I feel like a terrible host and a terrible steward of the music festival genre. But apparently it was Q Fest in Dallas and the headliner was JFK Jr. Now, I hate that I didn't get a chance to party with my brothers and sisters at Q Fest, but
were you not checking in with your daily updates on?
I must have missed the newsletter.
Yeah, I saw turns some headlines.
Out, I think the headliner missed the newsletter too. I don't know what happened, but he didn't show up.
Yeah, just like him.
Is it?
After all that hype.
Did we get any report as to why he missed the big Q Fest?
Well, depending on who you listen to.
Uh-huh.
Because some people said he didn't make it because he's dead.
What? But
JFK.
Spoiler alert. Hang on a second.
Yeah. Some people want to believe that he didn't make it Because he actually went down in that plane.
I've really, really thought about this so much over the last 24 hours, Barry. I love QAnon. I love these people so much. They are batshit fun. They don't make any sense. I just don't understand how a group of people who hate the government so much, and they especially hate left-wing government so much, why have they put all of their faith in a... John F. Kennedy's son, who could have been more liberal, running a a magazine showing off pretty men. And like, what sense does any of this make? I don't know, but I love it.
Oh, I know. You get the sense there's probably a bunch of people sitting around just like, what you got? What do you know? What's the craziest?
Oh my God, just throwing shit at the wall. Like, they're going to love this. They're going to love
this. That's good. That's good. Put that out there.
What if you threw out an idea out there and nobody really liked it? What if, like, is there like QAnon like rejects?
Yeah, like they put it out there and somebody said, ah, nobody gonna believe that. What would that
I got
be?
Him to bite on this JFK Jr. thing, man. What are you talking about?
What would it be? That's a good question.
I the other thing too about the QAnon thing, they make the head of the amount of people there, Barry, right? The amount of people there was astronomical. And the other, what if they were right?
And he did show
imagine
up.
This world, and all of a sudden, if right through the neighborhood where good old dad died, here comes JFK Jr.
Here you go. He shows
what if
up.
They were right?
That would be funny. He'd say, well, I wasn't going to come out, but you guys found me.
I mean,
and here I am.
You call it funny. I mean, there would be a new world order. We would be
living. That's true.
We would be boarding up the windows. They'd be taking over if all of a sudden they were right.
Ooh. You know, I've told you during our show at some point that I've interviewed Lewis Black on several occasions. And one of my first questions is always, you know, what's it like? You wake up every day, open the paper, and material is pretty much not handed to you because he has to work. And the last time I talked to him, he was like, yeah, it's getting harder and harder because what I try to do is be crazier than what the reality is.
Yeah.
And I can't do it anymore. You know, just stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, what really... if a comedian came out and said, ah, ha, ha, did you hear the latest? JFK Jr. is going to be at this festival. And people would look at him like, "You're well, that's not even funny. What are you talking about?
This guy's bombing.
Yeah. I paid for this.
It is pretty, tough times for Lewis Black. I really enjoyed that. I really can't stop listening. And frankly, if I didn't think that I was being watched by Russia and the government and all these other people, I probably would be on these QAnon message boards. I think that they're so much fun that like they don't make any sense. And I don't know why I revel in this nonsense, but it's just great.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, anything
because by the way, if in fact this vaccine gave me some 5G technology, why is my internet not better? Give me that 5G, man. I need.
That's true. You should just coverage. Be able to put the mic up next to your head.
Yeah. I shouldn't even have to speak right now. I should
right.
Like the thoughts should be coming out anyway. All right. So, Duran Jones today, I wanted to also, at the end of the show, but Taco's not here, so I feel like I've got a punt yet again on talking about Dune. I so badly want to talk to someone about Dune, and I've got no one to talk to about this.
Yeah, we gotta wait for Taco.
Although I keep waiting to talk to it with people who have seen it, acting as if I'm someone who saw it. I got 45 minutes in before I fell asleep twice.
You saw it.
I saw enough.
Yeah, you saw it.
Yeah, I feel bad about it. All right, so there
like
you go.
I said, it's not quite, you know, Frodo looking for taking hours and hours and hours to get rid of that dang ring, but it's a little slow.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like you and the lady finding that ring.
If the music
hours after hours. After
yeah, hours. Right.
Duran Jones and the Indications, our guest today on the What Podcast. What up, Duran?
There he is.
What's up, man?
Man,
hey, how's it going?
That's great to see you.
Good to see you guys too.
What's happening in Duran Jones's life? I can't be more excited to talk to you again. Especially on a week like this, where you know you wrap up the final show of the year, and you know you're killing it in Halloween, and I don't even know what to say about the last year. I can't even imagine what you have to say about it.
Oh man, well, you know, the work never ends. You know, one door closes, another door opens. I'm actually just recouping from tour for a little bit. I'm gonna head to New York City tomorrow to play with Prez Hall.
I heard
Jazz band. Yes,
so. New Orleans own Prez Hall and Big Frida. What in the world is going on? Why has New Orleans come to Brooklyn?
Well, you know, Prez Hall is about to celebrate their anniversary, and they just invited me to come along with them. So I'm excited, man.
That's awesome. What are you doing?
I'm going to sing a couple of songs with them. I text messaged Ben Jaffe earlier today.
I know Ben.
Yeah, he's a homie, man. That's my brother. And we were just shooting the stuff, you know.
Yeah.
He was like, what you want to do? I was like, I don't know what you want to do. I was like, we'll figure it out at dinner tomorrow.
I want to shoot is what I do. When people ask me what I want to do. So, Duran, what's interesting about Ben, and I don't know if Barry knows Ben very well, but so Prez Hall, the Prez Hall guys just opened up here in New Orleans a what used to be One Eye Jacks. It's now Toulouse Theater.
I heard about that.
And Big Frida was their sort of opening show. And the way that, you know, Ben Jaffe, you know him when you see him. Let's just put it that way, right? Yeah. Like, he's just got this hair and he's got this presence. He's just he's the most recognizable person maybe in New Orleans other than Big Frida. And so he's just sitting there, man in the door, you know, just working the door as you walk in. I'm like, what kind of world am I in right now? Where there's Win Butler from Arcade Fire on one side of the bar. Ben Jaffe's working the door. This is the strangest night in the world. But yeah, that'll be really big for you. That'll be a lot of fun, considering, if you don't know, listener of the What podcast, Durand, Ascension Parish's own. Was it Ascension? Right. Are you from Ascension or it wasn't Orleans?
I was born at Charity Hospital. My dad was living out of New Orleans, but shortly thereafter, after I was born, he moved back to his hometown, Hillaryville, Louisiana, which is in Ascension Parish.
Yeah, which is, if you don't know, Bear, about an hour away from New Orleans.
Yeah, I thought you guys were live close or knew where each other had lives, put it that way. Yeah.
Well,
yes, indeed.
Where in New Orleans was it that that he brought you to? Did you spend any time here, by the way, or did you just go straight to Ascension? Yeah.
Well, I was really young whenever we moved back to Hillaryville. I was still a baby, but, you know, just knowing that, like, that's where my soul body was, like, awakened in this earth. I was always intrigued with New Orleans, so I did get to live in New Orleans for a little bit. I lived in the Gentilly area after I finished college. And it's really where I kind of cut my teeth as a musician, like really figuring out a lot of things.
So not Bloomington, Indiana? Sorry.
Well, I went to Bloomington, Indiana for grad school, and that's where I met my band. But, you know, once we all finished college, we didn't think anything was going to happen with the Indication. So some of the cats went to New York City. Some went to Chicago. I went back down to Louisiana. And that was like the true start of my professional career. Like I was out of school and I was just trying to get into bands. So I would go to jam sessions out on Frenchman Street on Monday nights. And
Stray Cat? That's Stray Cat or Spotted Cat, rather?
I went to some at 70 by 90, 60 by 90.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right. At the start something of Frenchman Street. That's right.
Yeah. And La Maison. Mm-hmm. I would go to BMC.
DBA, Royal Frenchman Hotel.
Yes. My man. Yes. And yeah, from there I met hip hop artists and funk bands and gypsy jazz bands. I was playing a lot of saxophone around that time. And that's where I really started to cut my teeth and gig and really try to make it as a full time musician.
That all makes more sense. And I'm making light of it. Obviously, we talked to Aaron last week, and this idea of you guys getting together in Bloomington, Indiana. I'm from Lafayette, Indiana. So there's when we think of soul, Indiana is not, you know, maybe the epicenter.
Gary, Indiana, maybe. But
Gary,
not Bloomington.
Yeah, we decided Gary, yeah. Maybe. But anyway, that's why I've made the comment.
I mean, it really is. I'll put it this way. I'm not going to make any assumptions. How much of New Orleans is in you as a musician, songwriter?
Oh, man, it's really deep inside. I know for a fact that when my soul leaves my body, I don't want my body to be laid to rest anywhere else but New Orleans. Like, it's my favorite city in the whole wide world. And every time I'm there, I feel embraced and I feel loved. So,
well, come on back. What year were you traveling up and down Frenchman, cutting your teeth, as you say?
2015, man. 2016.
I bet we know so many of the same people. I bet if I start rattling off names, you're like, oh yeah, I played at Kermit's with him.
If you don't mind, complete the sort of circle, because Aaron, like I said last week, sort of told us a bit of the origins, but I don't remember him saying that you guys all sort of dispersed after grad school. So how did it all come back together with those same guys?
Well, so I was living in New Orleans, and right around the end of the summer, Coal Mine Records, in the summer of 2015, Coal Mine Records announced that they would release a single of Duran Jones and the Indications, and that song was titled Smile. And to me, it felt like somewhat of a big deal, you know, just like a lot of my friends and bandmates were excited for me. And a really good friend encouraged me to come back to Bloomington, to actually move back to Bloomington. So I packed up all of my crap and I moved back up to Bloomington just to be closer to the guys, try to make something happen. Fast forward a couple of months later, June 2016, the record came out. And by this time, I was not actively working in music full time anymore. It became a little bit more of a side project. And I was working, of all places, in a science lab. And I was dreaming about, you know, I was just like, every day I would like anticipate 5 p.m. so I could bring my ass home and get to the piano. Like, I just knew that like playing music was what I wanted to do, what my soul calling was. And so then June happened and the record was released through Coal Mine Records. And I've played in so many bands before, from classical to hip hop to jazz to rock and roll, all the way down the line. And this was like the very first time in any bands where I was seeing that the reception that we were getting, like the interviews and the recognition and all these different things were really popping off. And so I talked to my boss about it. And
what were you doing, by the way? Where were you working? What kind of boss did you have to ask this to?
Scientist. I was working in an eye science lab.
Yeah, but what are you doing in a science lab? What is it? What is that job?
Oh, man, I was a research associate. So my main job was to use this device, like a microscope, that would shine a very, very, very tiny light within your eye so that I could see your retina. And from there, I would snap pictures of it. And then the pictures were really, the pictures were code. So like, then we would decode the information, the data from the microscope, and we would render pictures of people's retinas so that we could tell to see like what's going on in there. Like, do they have age-related macular degeneration? Or we would scan people with diabetes mostly because loss of eyesight is correlated to diabetes. So we would see if there's diabetic retinopathy in there as well and some other diseases, but AMD and DR were the main ones that we focused on. And I mean, it was kind of
You talk
of
about fun. It as if you're doing it right now. How is it that you still have this wealth of knowledge about microscopic eye picks?
I'm just sitting here thinking, can you work those words into a song? That'd be
And then you said it was fun. This sounds anything but fun.
It could be fun sometime when we have patients, but a lot of the days it was very, very slow. And on those days, my boss just gave me lots and lots and lots of peer-reviewed articles to read. Some that took days to read because I could only decipher a paragraph like every hour. There's just so many complex words and and terms and things that I never heard before, you know. But I was happy to learn and to do that. And she gave me that job, she told me at the end, because she thought that I was capable and smart, and it worked. Like, it totally worked. She made me believe in myself a little bit more, and she really instilled some confidence within me, you know.
Well,
so
I mean, if there's if there's any more of a testament of getting out of your comfort zone, you know, you did it and you succeeded at it. That's, you know.
But it doesn't sound like it was one of those jobs where you could take your mind somewhere else and write songs while you were doing it. You had to focus.
Yes, definitely.
You know, John Prine was a mailman, so he got to drive around 8 hours a day and write songs in his head.
Brittany Howard delivered the mail.
Yeah, this was a little different. That's funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really was.
I bet that was tough to give up.
Yeah, no kidding.
Know, crowds.
Yeah, walk away from this career. I don't know how I'm going to do it. So you are in Bloomington. I'm guessing that you're not there for very long before you guys say, "All right, let's really do this," right?
Yeah. So I quit my job and then I moved back down to Louisiana. But this time, instead of New Orleans, I went to my hometown, Hillaryville, and I lived with my grandmother to help take care of her part time. But whenever I wasn't doing that, I was writing songs and hitting the road with the Indications. And that was really the start of us really taking this thing, or trying to bring this thing to the next level, you know, trying to make careers out of it. Yeah.
You said something a minute ago that leads me to a question that I wanted to ask. You said you were in a lot of different musical groups, but this type of music was the one that seemed to be getting the most reaction. Is that correct?
Yes.
Does it feel like, Brad and I were talking about it a little bit before you came on, I mean, we had Aaron on last week, and Brad and I both love this type of music. Does it feel to you like there's a trend towards soul music, or is it just coincidental that we love it? And, you know, we've had you and Aaron on in recent weeks.
Definitely a trend. And, you know, like before I moved to Bloomington the first time, like for grad school, I didn't know what exactly was happening in the soul scene. It was when I met Blake Ryan, a guitar player, and he handed me a Charles Bradley CD.
Mm-hmm. The Flying Eagle of Soul.
Yes. May he forever rest in peace and power. he gave me the No Time for Dreaming CD, their very first one. And this was back in 2012. And this was the first time I've ever heard a dap tone artist. And then immediately after that, I was introduced to Sharon Jones. And
may she forever rest in peace too.
Yes. And immediately I felt inspired. You know, like I felt like I could have a voice in making music like that, being capable to make music like that. And then like doing like a little research, digging deeper, you know, like seeing that Mark Ronson worked heavily with the Dap Kings and Dap Tone Records, as well as Amy Winehouse and Salaam Remy and all these really great folks. And so I was just like, wow. I would love to write music and be like this. So I stand on Charles and Sharon and the like of them shoulders, because they kind of cleared the path for the Indications to be a band, to be successful. Like they really like went in the jungle or the thick of it all and just cleared a path and outlined a way for us. And I feel like we're clearing that path even more now for other young artists who are trying to do what we do. So it feels really cool.
Man, it warms my heart in ways and gives me chills to hear you talk about stuff like that, because I was feeling the exact same way when I listened to Charles Bradley the first time, when I listened to Sharon Jones the first time. One of the two greatest musical memories I have in my life, and I will probably cry talking about it, is when Charles Bradley played Bonnaroo the very first time, only time. And it was right after that album, right after he had really, you know, found a lane. And you know, there might have been 300, 400, 500 people there. It wasn't a big attended show on the main stage on a Saturday morning, Sunday, midday, something like that. And the tears that he flowed, he got off the stage after the show. This is the what stage at Bonnaroo. He gets off the stage and goes to every single person in that pit and hugs every one of them. Every one of them. It's because he spent 40 years trying to get there. 40 years. Yeah. And he finally got it. I mean, that to me is like the is what I shut up. You know, I mean, this is what it's about. And then Sharon Jones, one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life is Valentine's night, you know, and on a romantic night with, you know, the wife and some friends. You see her in Atlanta, and she had just, it was her first show after her first chemo treatment. And you could see her struggling, but my God, if that's struggling, I want every bit of that energy, because she's got it. She was exploding across the stage. Two of the greatest, you know, at least for me, two of the greatest artists I've ever seen in my own, with my own eyes. I love them with all of my heart.
Yes, I agree, man. I never got to see Charles. We were going to play a show with him October of the year that he passed, which was heartbreaking. But I did get to see Sharon one time, and it was one of the most amazing nights of my life. Yeah. I will never forget it for the rest of my entire life. I mean, encore after encore after encore after encore, to say, like, you know, like she had just, you know, like she was really going through it with the cancer, but like she did not let that, even though her body was fighting against her, she did not let her spirit deter away from her purpose.
That's right.
And I feel like that's what soul music about. That's soul right. power right there, baby. That's you know, right. like she really had it. She had it. And I really wish we could have met. Because I really do feel like we would be friends. We have so much in common. Mainly one being that Gladys Knight is our favorite soul singer.
Well, the encouraging thing to me here is a couple of things. One, that you feel like there's a trend. That means there's an audience, which allows you to make new music, which is incredible. But also, I'm older than you guys, and one of the things I've learned is there are like entry You know, there are entry performers and entry songs. You know, somebody might hear you and not have heard of a Sharon Jones, or I can't imagine not have heard of a Gladys Knight, but you know, it makes people want to discover more and eventually get back to the Gladys's, the, you know, the Impressions, yes. You know, Otis, on and on and on, the Charles Bratt. I mean, you know, that to me is the fun part. And that to me is so important. You know, yes. People to learn where you got your inspiration from, and then to be inspired from it and discover it as if it's new. You know, that's one of my favorite expressions. Somebody says, man, I wish I could hear that person for the first time again. You know, what a cool thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the, you say Gladys Knight. Interesting that you say that and not Otis Redding first, but I would also, I would throw a name in there for female, Miss Carla Thomas.
Oh man.
I think that when you put Otis and Carla together, it was magic. And you can feel the chemistry just explodes, but you know, Carla didn't have the career that a Gladys Knight had. So I understand why you went Gladys, but
yeah, Otis. There's room for everybody.
Yeah. You know, that King and Queen album that Carla and Otis did is like mm-hmm. It's like in my top three mm-hmm. of all time.
Well, albums. I mean, yeah, it's in the top three because the other problem is the other two are Otis Redding albums. You know, that's my, the essential Otis Redding is the greatest piece of art I've ever listened to. It's I think Dreams to Remember is the greatest piece of art ever created.
I think I'm gonna put Al Green in there somewhere too.
Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Yes. Well, so with all that being said, you know, you get the band and we've gone through the progression of the band, you know, in previous weeks. But what I love about it now, and being maybe the only guy in the country exploding with Which You, I love Which You so much. I think this song is a smash. And I think it does all the things that I love about you guys, right? It's playful. You can dance to it. You can get a little sexy time with it. And it plays with you and Aaron so perfectly. You know, when you guys get in that pocket on Which You, it's magic, right? So, you know, you can start to see a progression. I say that I've said this 100 times about you guys. I feel the same way that I felt the first time I saw Alabama Shakes at Bonnaroo. I said, I feel like I've just discovered something that's going to sit and grow right in front of me. And if anything, you tell me if I'm right. From the first album to this album, I'm starting to see a pattern of you guys really, really figuring this thing out and where you want this to go.
Yes. Yeah, man. We, like, since that first record, which we wrote all of that stuff in the years of 2012, 13, and 14. Yeah, we did stuff in 14 as well for the first record. We just took our time with it. You know, it was a side project. And then, you know, that thing didn't get released until 2016. And by then, when American Love Call came around, you know, like, we had all collectively like moved to our own spaces, places. We were just figuring out what adulthood means outside of college and stuff like that. And we got on the road and we really learned about each other because we never, well, I personally haven't lived with any of the guys before. I know some of them were roommates before in the past, but, we really got to learn about each other and we, you know, life matures you. You go through relationships. You have your ups and downs, your triumphs and your tribulations, all that stuff. And I really do feel like those experiences kind of, if you really try, you can apply them to your art. And I really do feel like just going through maturity and learning how to be a grown ass adult really helped our music out so much. And I really hope, you know, that folks who listen to these albums really do hear and feel the progression, and hopefully see that the future is bright and that we can go in a lot of directions and places. It's really exciting as well, because pretty much everybody in the band now is collectively working towards making the Indications as the best as it could be, but also has like all these little side projects as well. So it's cool that we have like a nucleus mm-hmm. where we're all together, but outside of that, you know, like we all have our own things too, which is
Barry. Really, what was the analogy that Aaron used last week?
Aaron said it was like being a superhero, one of the
Marvel universe.
Where, yeah, it's so true.
Like Hulk or whatever saves the universe, the rest of you aren't jealous because he got more press than you did, or type of thing. I thought it was a great analogy.
It really is.
Just as an aside, what was that traveling together like? I mean, you allude to it, you know, you dance around it, but you're now stuck with a whole bunch of people that you really haven't spent all that much time with. How much of a job was just that?
Yeah. Are you talking about traveling when mm-hmm. we first started?
Yeah.
Yeah. When, oh, man. I assume it was in a van.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were in a
smelly
van.
Feet.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we were in a van. You know, by the end of tour, the band definitely had our collective funk in it, you know. And we didn't have a trailer, so we fit all the equipment and all of the luggage for a band of seven in that tiny back compartment. It was ridiculously crazy. We stuffed in there. We slept in hotels when we could. We slept at friends' places a lot of the time. Slept on floors. It was really tough. Mm-hmm. But I think we all knew that, you know, to get this thing started, we needed to put in the sweat equity, you know. And a lot of young cats, they come to me and they ask me, you know, like, how do, you know, I get to where you are, blah, blah, blah. Sweat equity is one of the main things, you know, like it sucks being an independent artist, musician, trying to, you know, get yourself in places in those first couple of years can be rough. I mean, they were pretty rough for us, but we stuck it out and we stayed tough. And I think, you know, even just like seeing how excited or how touched people were from the music just kept us going. Yeah, those first couple of years, it was a grind. It was a total grind.
I'm so glad you said it that way. I really am. You know, it is the biggest, it's the biggest missed opportunity for kids in this industry who show up and then get on TikTok or get a streaming song. And then all of a sudden they see the benefits of a hit, you know? And they miss the part of it where it makes you grow as a human being, right? That time that you spend on the road makes you a better artist, makes you a better singer, makes you a better songwriter. All of these things, you know, affect you. And just being dropped in off of a TikTok song, you're missing the shot. You're missing
the
good part.
I was thinking the same. There's a lot of good music that's been made in some kid's bedroom, you know, with a computer. But what you're talking about is a whole nother level of growing up, developing. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I hope you keep doing it, Duran. I mean, I said this to you at ACL Fest. You know, first off, very jealous of Duran Jones and his style. The man can wear a hat. And I get so jealous of people who can hold a hat. I can't do it. And he looked at me. He's like, you could wear a hat. And then he looked at me a little bit more and he's like, no, you couldn't. No.
I've seen it, Duran.
It doesn't work. So
I got to ask for you. You sound like you're, I can't believe you haven't asked. What was that like? Because Brad has bragged for two shows about that ACL where you were in the back watching Aaron perform. I mean,
yeah, he was standing next to Adrian from Black Pumas.
Kind of glossed over that. What's that like watching that happen?
Oh, it was absolutely fabulous. You know, I had to be there and I had to support my boy, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I wasn't going to be like the dude that's too cool for school. I wanted to dance, you know, and really show him that, you know, the vibrations that they were giving out were giving my soul everything that it needed. So, that's cool. Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah, I told you, like, I went to ACL because of Duran Jones. I went to see you guys. I thought that first show that you did on Thursday night was incredible. My God, that energy work. I thought the ACL show was great. And then I stayed the next day for Aaron. And it just, you know, like I said, and I'm not going to belabor this point, it felt like I had just seen the Alabama Shakes for the first time, you know, right after their first Bonnaroo show. It feels like it's a real, real thing. And I'm just so happy. I feel like I've got my own little, I got my new little thing. Although I've got all the records and listened to you guys for years, it does feel like, you know, how about this? I'll put it this way. Do you almost feel like a new band?
No, I don't.
Okay. Is it weird? Is it weird though, for a guy like you who's been doing this for so long and you just went through the whole, you know, litany of work that you put in, is it weird to find people finding you for the first time?
Is it weird that people are still finding me for the first time?
I'll put it this way. If somebody walks up to you and say, "Hey, I just found your band," is there a part of you in the back of your mind that says, "Where you been?"
Yeah. No, not really. Okay. I understand. Right. Like, I understand that. And I wish more people would understand just like how much music is being made right now. It's crazy how much music is being made. I saw one statistic about like how many songs are put on Spotify.
I saw the same
in an
thing,
hour.
Yeah.
And it's wild. It's so crazy. And I wish other musicians, if you're hearing this, seeing this, like if you like tell some folk like, "Hey, have you heard this?" And they're like, "No," don't be shocked. Cause like, it's just so much stuff going on out here. And yeah, like that's one thing with me. Yeah.
I'm
totally
mean,
cool if they
I mean,
know.
You've got, look, you're a much better person than I am. I love the shame. I love making people feel shame for not being where I am. I really like it. So by the way, to wrap this up, where are you right now? What city are you in these days?
I'm in San Antonio.
You don't live in San Antonio, do you?
I do. Yep,
what?
I do.
Wow.
Were you rooting for the Astros? Were you a Houston guy last week and a half in the World Series?
I watched a little bit of it, but honestly, my brother was going for the Astros, but I was kind of going for the Braves, running for the Braves, you know, like.
Okay.
Good for you. Me too.
All right. Whatever.
Brad's not a fan. I am.
Duran, have a blast with Frida. Have a blast with Ben. That'll be a really good show. I'm actually jealous. I want to go. But yeah, and come back to New Orleans soon, buddy. I can't wait to have you guys in.
I can't wait either, man. I got a project that, I'm going to be dropping pretty soon in collaboration with Southwest Airlines.
Really? What is it?
They brought me all around New Orleans. I took camera crew to all of my favorite spots and I performed a little bit.
Stop
in
it.
Preservation Hall in there. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be on all the social media stuff. So
I'm kind of offended. Yeah. I wasn't invited.
How did you miss Brad's house?
I've got to admit it.
Next time, man.
I had to take you to the Pals. I'd take you to my favorite bar.
Oh man, next time, bro. Next time. I'm gonna tell management to link me with your number or something so that we can
is it
stay on a closer connection.
Let's do it. Is it a song?
Oh no, it's like a whole series. So it's like a 30-minute video.
Stop it.
Kind
no
of
kidding.
Like kind of like the Bourdain style of things where I'm just going to restaurants, I went to Euclid. I went to B-Mike Studio. I went to Preservation Hall. Mm-hmm. And I'm just talking about New Orleans with artists and creators and farmers and all this kind of stuff about, you know, the culture, the life, and why we love the city.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yes, please, please get with me about that, because the radio station will be all about that.
Word up.
I'll put the radio station all over that, man.
Cool.
All right, man. Duran, I'm so happy for you. I'm so happy for the band, and I can't wait to see you guys again. All right. Thanks so much for this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
See you,
buddy.
I'll send you some eye pictures and you can dissect them for me. Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, hello there. This is Brad Steiner.
This is Barry Corder.
And after you check out the latest episode of the What Podcast, be sure to check out some of the other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including
Rootsland. It's an original story of two friends who take a musical and spiritual journey from the suburbs of Long Island to the streets of Kingston, Jamaica.
Or Kyle Meredith With, where you can find interviews with all of your favorite musicians and bands, hosted by our guy, Kyle Meredith. New episodes air weekly on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
Duran Jones of Duran Jones, The Indications. I feel like I'll just put it this way, Barry. I'll take the thank yous now.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I really do. Thank you. Yeah, you turned me on to. No, I thank you for both of them. They're great.
I was trying to do the shame thing that they I was telling Duran about. I was, throwing some shame at you.
He played that right off.
I know. I just can't keep saying it over and over and over. I really do love this band, and I really do feel as though, you know, I think one of the great stories in all of music over the last 10 years was from Boys to Girls, Boys and Girls to Sound and Color. I think that progression of a band going from album one to album two, maybe one of the biggest leaps I've ever heard in the music industry, right? But that's what it feels like to me. It feels like they are right there. They're right there on the precipice of making this really great. And if you haven't heard With You, it's one of those songs, and I say this on the air all the time, considering I'm the only guy in the country, you know, willing to go on a limb and play this song. But it's one of those songs, if you put it on around people, they're going to do this. Who dat?
Well,
is this?
That's what I'm excited about.
It's got that tone.
I'm excited at the idea that this type of music is a thing.
I've done
this long enough to know that it comes in cycles, and I don't want to sound like the old guy, like, you know, music was way better back when, because I don't say that. I don't mean that. There's a lot of great music being put out, the idea of real musicians playing real music about songs that touch people is great. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's, I'm excited to see where it goes. And he was great, and Aaron was great, and thrilled to talk to both of them.
Really, really, you know, two of my favorite conversations this past year. Another good one next week. I don't want to spill the beans, but I'm really, really excited about next week. It will be a What Podcast first. We'll see you then.
Bonus.
What Podcast. It's Barry and Brad. Love you. Bye. We'll be right back.
Consequence Podcast Network.